So yesterday in the SCID session, I don't know how many of you were in the SCID session, but if you were there, I'm not going to repeat some of the things that I said there. But I did want to repeat again just the key features that relate to newborn screening for this condition. So this is a syndrome, and it's not screened for by a particular genetic mutation. It's screened for by a common feature that all the different molecular types of SCID have, and that is zero T cells. So if you don't have any T cells, you're going to be lymphopenic. And theoretically, if you're a well-educated, up-to-date, caring pediatrician, you're going to look at a blood count to see if there are any, if there's a low lymphocyte count. But that's not always a good thing to rely on. And so let me just give you a little bit of history. In March of 2007, the Immune Deficiency Foundation nominated me for a seat on the Secretary's Advisory Committee for Heritable Disorders of Newborns and Children. And I was appointed to this committee in September of 2007. When I arrived for my first meeting, I realized that I was the only immunologist on the committee. And so most of the other people were endocrinologists or metabolic people, and they didn't know any immunology, and they didn't particularly care about immunology. So part of my first time there was to sort of educate the other members of the committee about immunologic diseases and immunologic deficiency. And shortly after I went on the committee, Dr. Puck nominated SCID to be considered by the committee as a condition to be included in the routine newborn screening test. In other words, that there were 29 conditions that were already approved to be regularly screened for. And so the proposal was to add SCID as a 30th condition to be routinely screened for. And it went, for the next 3 years, it went through an evidence review committee, which was sort of an arduous review. But ultimately, in January of 2010, the committee unanimously approved SCID to be added to the list of conditions routinely screened for. And then in May of 2010, the Secretary of HHS approved this. However, what's done in Washington doesn't necessarily get translated to what's done in the states. The states can do whatever they please to do. So why is this important? And I just say parenthetically, so far 31 states are currently doing this, and they've all found SCIDs. But there are several cases that we have had before us that call attention to why this is so urgent. And I'll tell you particularly about one baby we had that was admitted to the general pediatric service at Duke. And the reason the baby was admitted was because of a low-grade fever that the baby had been having off and on for 2 or 3 weeks. And she also had an ulcer on a hard palate. Upon admission, she was noted to have difficulty breathing, and they ordered a CBC blood count to be done. And initially they looked at it and didn't see any problem, but then one of the people who were rounding on the baby observed that she had low lymphocyte count. So they contacted hematology oncology, who said, well, she's got plenty of neutrophils, you don't need to worry. Why don't you consult immunology, which they did. And as soon as we saw that, we did flow cytometry and found out that the baby had no T cells or B cells. And so she was diagnosed promptly with SCID within 2 days after her admission. And so plans were then made for her to have a bone marrow transplant. However, she developed fulminating liver failure and died within 5 days after the diagnosis of SCID was made and before she could be transplanted. And we got back a lab result showing that she had a very high blood level of a virus called adenovirus. But in retrospect, her pediatrician had obtained a blood count and a manual differential 3 weeks earlier and reassured the mother not to worry because she had plenty of neutrophils. You see, I think part of the problem is in medical education. When medical students go to class, they're taught about low neutrophil counts, but they're never taught about low lymphocyte counts. So we can't rely on that test to be a way to pick up these babies. And the other thing about this family is that there was a family history of twin girls that had previously been lost and had been attributed to prematurity, but the family had refused to allow a postmortem exam. They also refused an autopsy on this baby, but fortunately we had blood from the baby and we were able to do molecular testing and show that this baby had RAG2 deficient SCID. The family was later found to be carriers and genetic counseling was given. So early diagnosis is important. Now this baby was 4 months old, so it was just barely over the 3.5 months that we found to be the period where if you can transplant then, there's a very high likelihood of success. I think you can see, if I can get a pointer to work here, that in this first 105 days of life, that it's almost flatline, that we had lost very few babies. However, after that, it goes down exponentially until they all die if you don't make a diagnosis early enough and before they die of a horrible infection. The other thing is that we went to the administrators at Duke and asked them if they could give us the cost of treating all of the babies with SCID. Well, they came back to me and said they'd lost all the information up until 1996, but they gave me the information from 96 onward. And you can see after we broke it down into whether they had been transplanted early or transplanted late, that the median cost of a transplant for those who were diagnosed early is around $100,000, whereas if they were diagnosed later, it's around $450,000. And then within the last 4 years, we have transplanted 4 babies in North Carolina who were Medicaid babies, who were like $4 million babies or $2 million babies. It's just the costs are escalating. And the main reason for that is it's not the cost of the transplant. It's the cost of treating the infections. Because if these babies are not diagnosed until they get sick, they go into the intensive care unit, and every night in the intensive care unit costs a minimum of $5,000, and then on top of that, all the other costs that occur. So it's very expensive to have these infections, and probably, it definitely affects their survival rate. So back in the year 2000, we did studies. Dhaval Patel was the first author on this paper. We published this in the New England Journal in 2000. And we demonstrated that babies with SCID do not have the pieces of DNA that are cut out when the T-cell receptor genes are rearranged. And you can see over here that before a bone marrow transplant, that there are no tracks over here, you can see. And Dr. Puck is going to talk more about this. Whereas at this many days after the transplant, there were plenty of tracks. We also showed in babies where we had stored peripheral blood samples before the transplant that even in a baby who had this many transposentially transferred maternal T cells, that the TRK value was extremely low. So even the babies who were born where the mother cells get into the fetal circulation before the baby's born, this does not affect the TRK test. And Jennifer is going to talk to you more about things that do affect the TRK test. But you can see that back then our cutoff was around 100, so this one barely had detectable TRKs. All the rest were below the level of detection except for this one right here, who also had some transposentially transferred maternal cells. But in general, this assay is excellent for detecting a lack of T cells. And so because you can't rely on physicians to look at CBCs and manual differentials and look at the lymphocyte count, you need to have a test that can be done at the time of birth, and this is a test that won out, as you will hear from Jennifer. Okay, so I think I'm going the wrong way. Okay, so I'm going to conclude this saying that this is a pediatric emergency. The potential exists to diagnose this condition routinely at birth. And if you can do a stem cell transplant, and in our hands we do it from a relative, in the first 3.5 months of life without pre-transplant chemo or post-transplant GVH prophylaxis and before infections develop, there's a very high probability of success. So the treatment that we've been using for the last 3 decades is life-saving and highly effective for all forms of SCID, but like the other available treatments for SCID, is not a perfect treatment. We would hope that in the future one would be developed. Thank you very much. Oh, if I could have just a couple more minutes, I wanted to say that when these patients are picked up, they should be referred to an immunologist. You don't refer them directly to a transplant center because Jennifer's going to tell you about all the other conditions that are being picked up by this test. And if you refer them directly to a transplant center, there's not likely to be an immunologist there, and they're probably going to transplant patients that don't need to be transplanted. So my concerns for the future are how can we ensure that screen-positive infants are evaluated by an immunologist first to determine that the diagnosis is correct? And then the other concern is how many screen-positive infants will receive unnecessary transplants? Some of these babies don't need to have a bone marrow transplant. And who will be transplanting these infants? Do they have experience in treating SCID? And how many SCIDs will receive unnecessary pre-transplant conditioning? And I have a few slides just to show you the reason for my concern. There are adverse effects from giving pre-transplant chemotherapy. Among the early ones are shown on this slide, but at the bottom of the slide is the most important one right here. This can be a devastating complication from chemotherapy, veno-occlusive disease. Then other late events are adverse effects on the organs, the kidneys, liver, heart, and lungs, poor growth, poor tooth development, delayed puberty, and then most of these patients are going to be sterile, and then they're also at risk for malignancy. And then the last slide here is about the long-term neurocognitive function of patients with SCID who have been given mostly pre-transplant conditioning. There are 2 articles about this.